call the CVAC TAC to order. Roll call.
Blythe?
Here.
Cathedral City? Coachella?
Here.
Desert Hot Springs? Indian Wells?
Here.
Indio?
Here.
La Quinta?
Here.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Here.
Rancho Mirage? Riverside County?
Here.
Agua Caliente?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Joanna. At this time, the time is reserved for public comments. Do you have any members of the public that would like to speak? I don't have any cards, so we'll move on to agenda item number 4. Any comments from the chat? Seeing none, Mr. Executive Director, no comments?
No comments.
Next item, consent calendar. We have the April 9th TAC minutes. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Move the consent agenda.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Item B, authorization MSRC local grant application.
I don't know part of the consent calendar.
Okay. It's all over. Next agenda item, 6A, consideration of voluntary green building program. Jacob?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kitty will be handing out now. Basically, it's our Green for Life umbrella. It goes underneath the sustainability pledge that the mayor signed back in 2009. It provides an easy graphic for you to reference in terms of the Green for Life building Green for Life program, and breaks it down into greenhouse gas reductions, municipal energy management, and voluntary green building program. As you recall, last month we provided some background on this particular program, the voluntary green building program, to this committee, and we also followed up with the executive committee. We've been providing some outreach over the past month. We spoke to both the Desert Valley Builders Association, Kirsten Gutierrez, as well as the Building Industry Association's Bill Blankenship, about the Voluntary Green Building Program. They were supportive. They were especially supportive of the word voluntary that was included in there. They are looking and shown some interest at for us to look at the existing building stock. And currently, we're scheduling a meeting with the Desert Valley Builders Association to meet with their membership and then eventually do some training programs with them. This month we're going, actually this week we'll be meeting with the Desert Contractors Association's Ron Phillips, who's enthusiastic about the meeting, and then later in June we'll be meeting with the Coachella Valley International Code Council. The Voluntary Green Building Program, the way we see it, is basically a jobs and education program. This will help revitalize the industry that's been hit hard or killed by our economy. With CalGreen, or the California Green Building Code, changing over the next couple years, this gives us a great opportunity to educate our construction industry, especially our local contractors, on how to build sustainable in a cost-effective manner in a market that's been changing. With the California goal of a net zero home by 2020, this will, which basically means a home that is built energy efficient and then also creates energy it consumes. We as a region want to make sure that our mom-and-pop contractors do not get displaced when this potential regulation is imposed. And then we also want to make sure that when they build, that they can do this in a cost-effective manner. We are currently working with COD universities as well as others like CVAP to build a education training, ongoing training program that will train both the contractors as well as staff, and then once again, to be sustainable and cost-effective over time. We have seen great interest from residents and other stakeholders on this program, and we just wanted to share that with you today. We're currently working on a website that will promote our regional green efforts, but also our regional green business efforts here in the Coachella Valley. And we're also developing some pretty sophisticated web tools or web applications for residents and contractors who want to do energy efficient upgrades to their homes but don't want to invest in a PhD to get there. These are web intuitive tools, web applications, so that anyone who would like to do energy efficiency projects doesn't have to put down a substantial chunk of money to make this happen, but that they could do it over time. Once again, this is basically about the economy, about helping our local economy. This will help our residents reduce energy consumption, which keeps dollars in their pockets, and in turn, they turn around and spend that with their local retail. Those increased revenues, as we know, will then increase the odds of them hiring more people, which is more jobs, and then in the end, those increased revenues will go back to the municipals in terms of tax increment, sales tax increment. Scheduling, we are currently working with your staff to start scheduling study sessions and being assigned to your council meetings for June and July. CBAC staff, along with our consultant teams, are carrying their load as much as possible. We're trying to make sure that we're not disrupting your staff and your current workflow that's going on. But we do need their input when we ask for it to be able to get all these policies to be customized to your cities, your jurisdictions, needs, and reflects those needs as well. Like I said, we'll be providing templates in terms of staff resolutions and staff reports. But once again, we just need that help when we ask for that specific input. We're currently, actually this month, we'll be going to our city certified Imperial Irrigation District to see how we proceed with them. Last week on May 10th, E&E approved staff's recommendation unanimously. And then just also wanted to let you guys know that cities of Tucson, Scottsdale, and Phoenix have also passed either voluntary or mandatory REACH code building programs. I did want to pose a question to here the city managers or the TAC committee to see if there's anyone that you would like us to talk to in your communities or specific groups that you see that there's a need for us to get their attention and solicit their input, or is there anything particular in your community that you feel that is needed that you would like us to help address? So you have staff recommendation, and there's a question.
To answer your last question, have you talked to DBBA or BIA about the voluntary rebuilding program?
Yes, we have. And we spoke to, in particular, Bill Blankenship as well as Gretchen, and both are supportive of it. Once again, it's the voluntary is the key term in there. They want us to pay specific attention to the existing building stock. They obviously know that's where the low-hanging fruit is, and that's where the jobs are going to be created for the local contractors. There's not going to be a lot of track maps that are going to be going to cities soon for approval, so using that existing building stock, helping those who are, you know, purchasing those the homes that are on the market right now from losing the term right now.
Jacob, could you help me understand the Uniform Building Code has just increased the standards for what I would call green building improvements. What are you going to do above and beyond, even voluntary, above the current building code?
Can I have Nicole facilitate that question?
Gentlemen, my name is Nicole Christ. I'm with Terra Nova Planning. The green building or program is structured to allow people to exceed the existing Title 24 standards by 15%, as well as implement measures that are not counted under the current Title 24 requirements that they can receive additional points for under this program.
And what do the points do to help the resident that decides to go above the Title 24?
The program is set up as a recognition program. We're proposing that the participating cities would recognize residents and businesses that take part in the program on an annual basis at the council level. So there would be a presentation once a year to recognize those folks who have participated. We're also hoping that we'll be able to partner with the retail sector so that folks who participate can either get gift certificates or rebates from the home improvement stores and the hardware stores for the projects that they implement.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a couple comments? Maybe you can do a presentation at the DBBA Legislative Affairs Committee meeting. I think they meet the first or last Thursdays of the month.
First Thursday
of the month. At right from our city hall at 7:30. That might not be a bad idea to do that. But I would ask the TAC members to push your planning directors to get this on as a study session item for your planning commission and then for your city councils also. Most of the work is done. CVAG staff really has provided good leadership on this. They've got the draft reports done, draft resolutions. Just have to have your city attorneys take a look at that. And the planning directors don't even have to make the presentation. They can introduce CVAG staff, and they can make the presentations there. But I think this is a great program, and I really want to support it.
Any other questions?
I think hats off to CVAG. This is a program that my small city could not be undertaken on its own. And it's only through this regional effort that the framework is set for us to join in. And it's not only going to help our community, but it's going to help the city as it tries to manage its own energy load. I'm intrigued with the online tool, the mobile app that has been mentioned. We have one that we use for code enforcement. I'm amazed about how people flock to that thing. But it's, we're all in this to improve the environment and to reduce our energy load. But this is also about economic development. This is about putting some people to work, doing weatherization under the guise of climate change. This is going to create some jobs as well. So that, I move for approval of staff recommendation.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
No opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob. Next is item 6B, consider amendment number 1 to the agreement with City of Coachella for F-152 grade separation. Alan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In October 2010, the Executive Committee approved an agreement with the City of Coachella, which authorized the reallocation of $10 million of Trade Corridors Improvement Fund of a grant, which was acquired by CVAG to be redirected from the Avenue 66 Grade Separation Project to the Avenue 52 Grade Separation Project. It also authorized the allocation of CVAG regional funds to match or to provide the match for CMAC funds, which also had been acquired by CVAG and were authorized by the Executive Committee in 2007. The TCIF funds are limited to $10 million per project, and they must be matched 50% with and the TCIF funds must be under construction by December 31st of 2013. The TCIF funds must only be used for construction purposes. Federal CMAC funds, federal funds, may be used to match TCIF funds. And as I mentioned, the funds above, their meeting in 2007, the Executive Committee approved a list of projects, total construction costs of over $30 million of CMAC money. Probably one of those projects was the Avenue 52 Grade Separation Project, which was recommended for award of $10,180,000. So we got $10 million of CMAC and $10 million of TCIF. Everything sounds good. The current estimated cost of the Avenue 52 Grade Separation Project is $22 million. However, as you read the letter that was submitted by the City of Coachella as attached to the staff report, the city is now concerned that the typical timetable for complying with both the federal and state procedures for right-of-way acquisition and environmental document processes, they may push the construction start date past the December 31st date that had been set for the TCIF funds. Therefore, the city has requested that CVAG agree to provide right-of-way costs to purchase right-of-way at this time, which will avoid the state and federal acquisition processes. And should, according to the city letter, it will save approximately 6 to 8 months on the schedule. That would then allow construction to begin in the summer of 2013 and avoid the deadline that has been established by TCIF. The Avenue 52 Grade Separation Project is ranked below the midpoint in the priority ranking of the TPPS. However, as we have done regularly in the past, this is a highly leveraged project. There's a number of projects that are listed on page 22 that's a different subject. This is a highly leveraged project, and we have often funded projects that are highly leveraged. There's bridge projects, two of them in Cathedral City, one in La Quinta, one in Ranch Mirage. Even though they ranked low in the TPPS, they were chosen to be funded because they had such highly leveraged on the other side. Again, while it is unlikely that the project may not go forward still, we do need to protect CBAC funds. Therefore, there's language included in this in the recommendation that should the project not meet the requirements of the TCIF grant, the City of Mequinta has preliminarily agreed that we will require repayment of these the funds that we are recommending approval of.
And even the City of Coachella, too.
What did I say?
Mequinta.
Okay. Oh, Mequinta, you're going to repay your
grant.
City of Coachella has agreed to repay the funds from the special to their council, and they'll be repaid over a period of time that has been set by our cash flow preservation policy. And to make note, this is not a policy that we're picking on the City of Mequinta or Coachella about. There's a number of projects that we've approved in the past. They're shown on page 22, those with bullet points beside them that we've applied the cash flow preservation policy to in the past. So this is not a new policy that we've just picked out the City of Coachella for. Staff recommendation today is that you approve the amendment number one to the agreement with the City of Coachella for the Avenue 52 grade separation project, the amount not to exceed $1,297,500. And the Transportation Committee concurred with this recommendation at their meeting last Monday.
Do we have any questions about it?
Alan, I recall there being a requirement with state funds that the environmental document has to be certified before right-of-way can be acquired. So how does that fit into the schedule?
I would ask the City of Coachella to respond.
Sure. We had a glitch basically in the that resulted in being caught between conflicting federal guidelines. We had federal law requires that you use a 20-year planning horizon when you plan your transportation projects. At the same time, the CMAC funds required that they can't be used for capacity enhancement of the roadway. The 20-year horizon required a six-lane road. The current road is four-lane, so we designed a six-lane road, which we had approved. We had that approved through our local federal office, and a wide range of things were proceeding expeditiously with that until, I guess, someone from the local area apparently objected to the approval of that. It was kicked up locally to a higher level of review and basically got involved at the regional administrator level, who basically said, no, you have to go with the four-lane design. We had already had a six-lane design. So the process of changing from the six-lane to a four-lane design is straightforward. It's pretty easy. We had most of the stuff designed. Our right-of-way is not going to change. So we think that we can rework it, restart it, keep things pretty much on track. The city engineer and our consultants say that we shouldn't have a problem meeting December 13th. In fact, right now we're scheduled to be under construction with the redesigned four-lane bridge by summer of 2013, so we should have about a six-month time horizon with the environmental approval programmed into that.
And if I could amplify, John, is can you proceed with right-of-way prior to the environmental documentation not being complete? You can't when you use federal funds, but that's the workaround here.
That's part of the reason for this.
It is the primary reason, I think, and CBAC does not require that sort of policy. So the funds that will be used to acquire the right-of-way are CVAG funds and City of Coachella funds. And that way we could proceed with the project without using federal and state funding from that aspect of the project.
I misunderstood the question. I mean, your question is absolutely on point, which is we can't. The answer to your question is we can't do it. I was answering the construction part. We anticipate being able to be in construction with the federal funds by the time the environmental documents are done. But in order to do that, we have to start the right-of-way acquisition, which is why we need CBAG and local money to do that up front, which we didn't anticipate we'd have to do.
I don't know, Dan, you had an issue with this on Jefferson, right?
Yeah, we did. It was actually before my time, but we did get ahead of ourselves. We did acquire right-of-way, and it caused a huge delay on that project.
And do you recall how you acquired right-of-way?
Source of funds?
It was proposed to be used
federal appropriations proposed to be used for that acquisition. That was part of the challenge.
So I guess, Alan, the $1,297,000, if it came from CBAG Measure A, you could acquire the right-of-way before the environmental document is complete? Where, David, is the environmental document in the process now?
It's been started, and it's being revised to reflect the new four-lane process, as over the four-lane structure versus the six-lane structure.
I don't think it's an EIS. I think they're just doing a Fonzie and then a neg deck after that.
I think that's correct.
I would suggest that maybe you get Caltrans or someone's acknowledgement in writing the right way could be acquired prior to the environmental document, just to make sure that this doesn't come back to hurt Coachella. Or I think this is a great project. I mean, you know, working with Caltrans, you talk to one person, you get one answer, and you talk to someone else, you get another answer. I'd hate for us to delay this project or hurt this project with a source of funding for the right-of-way.
Well, and that's a good point, because they have all these regulations. They make it up as they go, it seems. We had to actually carve out a big portion of the project because we moved too fast on acquiring the right-of-way, where no federal funds would be used for that portion of the project. So in this case, this right-of-way that's going to be purchased, is that carved out for the remainder of the project where only federal funds would be used?
The rest of the project would use a balance of federal funds and state funds. A great separation money, Prop 1B, and federal money called CMAQ funding.
But none of those funds would be used on the acquired right-of-way?
No way.
That's how we got around.
It's a similar workaround. And in your case, we separated projects or bifurcated projects. In this case, it's just of Jefferson and Barner. In this case, we're separating a phasing of the project, essentially. And we will acquire the right-of-way early on with local funds and use federal and state funds for big dollars associated with construction.
So that's why the environmental work has to be redone, because they separated the projects and now they revised scopes.
On this project, the environmental will be tweaked because the project has been rescoped from a six-lane facility to a four-lane. And that's it is unrelated to this discussion.
I'll take a shot at a motion. I'll move staff's recommendation with the addition of a letter from Caltrans that we could use local funds to purchase the right-of-way and it wouldn't harm the project scope or funding if we did use Measure A funds. Because even the county, when I tried to find out if Measure A was local or on the prevailing wage issue, they couldn't even answer that question.
One question, John, on the motion. I am concerned about that motion being perhaps a bit too restrictive. As you know, getting something in writing from Caltrans can be challenging, and even when you get something in writing, it may not be worth much, given that the chain of command may see it a different way later on. We could certainly strive to get something in writing working through the city of Coachella, but I wouldn't want to make it a precondition of releasing these funds. Timing is critical, and it could take us 9 months to get something in writing from Caltrans. And what Coachella really needs is assurance that there's funding to proceed with the right-of-way. And the security CBAG has is that if they don't meet the timelines, or for whatever reason this funding can't be applied or can't be realized through the ultimate construction, the funding would be repaid to CVAC.
By the peak?
No. So it all works out well. But I'd be apprehensive, and I assume the city of Coachella would be with having a precondition of Caltrans written authorization. But we could certainly strive to get that as a part of the record. Is that fair, David?
I'd be supportive of that motion if we were released from the obligation to repay the money.
Mark, how do you feel about that?
That's correct.
That would, basically, if the a prerequisite to the funds being available to begin the right of way is that we have a letter from Caltrans. I mean, that sort of takes it out of our hands. Right now, we're planning to begin immediately with the right-of-way acquisition in order to meet the deadline to be under construction by next summer. And the reason for the action is because it allows us to do that. If we have a condition prerequisite to that, which is some authority from Caltrans or a letter from Caltrans, that basically takes out of our hands the ability to begin construction. Or to begin right-of-way acquisition until we meet that.
Do I understand that this circumstance mirrors what you did in Indio and therefore a precedent was set?
There's some relevancy here, not one for one.
I would agree with Tom. I think there's many times in these bureaucracies it's better to ask forgiveness than permission. Hey, at least Caltrans, you get some response. It's better than PERS.
Well, there's a motion on the floor.
We already have, just another comment, we've already had one flip from Caltrans on this. We initially received approval from the local office for the six-lane bridge, and they wound up doing a 180-degree change on that. It's requiring basically the redesign. So I don't have a lot of confidence in Caltrans's consistency with their opinions.
John had a motion. Are we going to modify that motion?
Well, you need a second.
No second.
Do we have a second?
There was no second.
Okay.
If I understand it, if this were to fall apart, Coachella agrees to repay.
We'd repay
CDAG. So our decision today is, do we go forward and let Coachella take the risk, essentially? And I see no reason not to go forward with that on that basis.
Without the requirement that Caltrans...
Well, I agree with the concept of getting anything out of Caltrans is very difficult.
But we ought to seek it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so we just move staff recommendation and direct staff to attempt to wire.
Half the funding is coming from CMAC?
Yes.
And we have a CMAC consultant, Nick Nickerson?
I don't know. Do we have a CMAC consultant? Is he still working?
Not on this project. The city has their own consultants, and I believe it's Parsons.
Parsons.
Well, I would accept an interpretation memo from Parsons interpreting the federal guidelines that this is an acceptable use of local funds prior to the environmental document being certified.
That's easy to get.
I'll second that motion.
So my motion is to approve the staff recommendation and get a letter of interpretation on the federal guidelines that from Parsons that right-of-way can be acquired with this source of funds prior to the environmental document being certified.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Next is legislative update.
Let me introduce Aaron Sassy with the League of Cities. He'll be probably a familiar face in future months here at your meetings. And Aaron, maybe you could introduce yourself and explain the role you'll be playing here.
Well, thank you for having me today. I know I've been emailing many, if not all of you, so it's nice to see some faces with the names that I've been looking at. I am the new regional public affairs manager for the League of Cities to replace Dave Willman, who went to the DA's office, I think, a couple months ago. I'm originally from down in the Rancho Cucamonga area. I've worked in the legislature. I worked for Governor Schwarzenegger down in this area. But for the last 5+ years, I've been up in Sacramento working at, I worked at the lottery, and I worked at the Department of Corrections. So this job brought me back home. So I'm back to the area. So I'm still learning the issues, getting up to speed with the league. But I will be a new representative and look forward to working with all of you. I'm sure you're all aware that the May revise was just released this morning. In my quick trying to read for you, a few minutes back here, you know, the governor is trying to close the significant budget deficit of $15.7 billion. I'm sure you saw on the news over the weekend that it's grown. He's tackling this deficit with cuts. He's proposing about $8.3 billion in the May revise today in cuts. He's relying on his November tax initiative plan, and he is relying on some money from some savings from the mortgage abuse settlements. Just like I said, my brief read, the budget proposal includes about $38 million in cuts to UC, some additional cuts to the in-home supportive services, some additional cuts to courts. It does continue to fund the public safety realignment. It establishes the previous year's base, and then it adds the growth. And he is proposing some legislation to make this funding permanent. There is some additional trigger cuts. If his tax initiative does not pass, it would be some additional cuts to higher education. He is increasing K through 12 funding in this budget by about 16%. RDA elimination savings is scored in the May revise. It's about $818 million. So I know that this is something that the league will be looking at further, because we've been looking at some fixes. It doesn't look, just like I said from my preliminary examination of the budget, it doesn't look like some of those solutions we were looking for. All right.
They already killed it. Where are they going
to get it? Well, we were looking to get some affordable housing money, get some of the funding to help make the transition a little smoother. We've been working with leadership on this for a while. There's the AB 1585 that the Speaker Perez has proposed. There's a task force that's supposed to be looking at all the RDA bills. The big question has been where the governor sits on this.
Why do you say that's a question?
We don't know. We don't know what he'll end up doing. He hasn't been supportive of RDAs, as we all know, but we don't know what he'll do with
any of these. Has been pretty consistent that he'll veto anything that comes out.
Probably, but we're hoping that if leadership's behind at least some sort of solution, that maybe the governor will get behind it. So that is something that the league is working on.
I mean, so far, Perez and a couple of the others have had votes that are veto-proof. I mean, like, if Perez's bill had 8 votes against it.
I mean, it is something that we're working on. We don't know what's going to end up happening. So that's the bottom line. More information will be coming out on the budget. Like I said, it just got announced right before this meeting started. Today, the legislature is likely taking up AB 1692 by Wieckowski. It is the bankruptcy bill. I know we've gotten some letters already from a couple of your cities. The league's opposed to this. So if it's something that would impact your city, just make sure you're making those phone calls. Like I said, it'll be likely here today.
You know, we went through a wave where we really approached the whole grassroots approach to this, meaning you can't beat these guys in Sacramento. We've got to beat them in their districts. And it seems like we've drifted back to focusing on Sacramento as our legislative approach. My bet is if you turn the heat up from all the electeds in that member's district, that member is going to feel that heat a lot more than if we just all write letters to the legislature complaining. It has worked in the past. It worked for Prop 1A and it worked for Prop 1-2. And I'm not sure why the league has drifted away from that again in terms of our primary effort. But I would certainly suggest we give anybody that thinks they're supporting that complete welch on their deal in their districts and make it painful. They shouldn't be able to show up in their district and go to a Rotary meeting and not get roasted.
I think that you're absolutely right, especially in our area with it being a Democrat Democrat-controlled legislature. That is something that the league has been discussing. I know that I was up there for my first couple days on the job. It's still my first month on the job. So, but that is something that they did want to redirect our focus to, is how can we be more effective in getting change. I mean, especially, like, I think if you look at Riverside County, a lot of our legislators are Republican. Most of them are Republican. So I think we need to be more creative in our approach, use the resources we have to impact the change.
It doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. It's their district. And if every elected official in that district goes to that elected member and says, here's the deal. If you support this, I don't know how many constituents I really have, but I'll rally everyone I do to come out and get you. You're completing your last term in office. That has effect. Now, I get that it's hard to get some local electeds to actually stare down their state legislator. They have this passion and need to have them love them. But it's effective, and it has worked every time we've done it. And so it just doesn't matter. It's in the district. You've got to make them think they're going to lose their entire base of support for re-election, because that's what it's all about for them.
We are trying to focus more on grassroots. I wasn't here before, so but I know that's something that we talked about before I came down here. That's something that is a priority for me in my position. So hopefully that's something we can work towards. Any questions?
I have one question. It's really for the group. She mentioned the bankruptcy changes that were up there. One of the things that I've heard is that there are successor agencies that are considering filing bankruptcy as part of, to protect their assets. And I was wondering if anybody else had heard anything.
Mark that one down. I like that.
I know a couple like LA have just walked away from it and said, here.
Well, I think that's one of the ones. And I think it's from the larger agencies that are thinking of anyway, I just was curious whether anybody had heard anything.
I wrote Chris an email, and I'll raise it with this group, but I want to raise it with you. Liebach is not my favorite sheriff, but the Liebach case has profound consequences if that's really going to be the new law of the land, for those who aren't familiar. The federal appellate court ruled, and the Supreme Court declined to hear the case, that the executive in charge of an operation can be held personally liable for any federal civil rights violations generated by their agency. Now, for those of you who are city managers and run complex operations that may occasionally involve some allegation of civil wrongdoing, it could have an effect on you.
I'll blame the chief of police on the roof.
Well, this case would suggest it gets to go to everybody. And it's personal liability. It's not something that's indemnified under federal rules. So
it just keeps getting better.
I'm very concerned, and I don't know what the league's doing.
I'll check on that. I haven't heard anything, but that doesn't mean they're not, so I'll follow up.
Yes, Steve.
Can you give us the status of AB 1585? I haven't heard anything about it in a while.
So all of the redevelopment, the post-RVA bills, got placed into this new task force. They haven't really been doing a whole lot, to be honest. So everything's still in a holding pattern. I know that there's a little bit of a battle going between Perez and Steinberg for what they want included and not included, and this task force was supposed to take up all the bills and really come to some sort of a solution. From what I've heard, they haven't been meeting, though. So the task force just got established within the last couple of weeks, and everything seems to be just in a holding pattern.
Who's the head of that task force, if there is one?
It's a joint task force with legislators from both sides. I know Norma Torres was on it. None of the legislators from right here were part of it, but she was the closest.
Okay. And any word on any of the appeals? We filed a couple of appeals back in the deadline. When was that? February, March. And we've heard nothing. We've had Manuel Perez follow up, and he can't get any answers. Do you have any know what's going on with the appeals?
I don't, but I'll double check and I'll ask. But I haven't heard any news on that.
Aaron, the last meeting was at the city of Corona. When's the next meeting?
The next general membership meeting was supposed to be tonight. It got postponed to June 11th at Indian Wells, actually. So June 11th will be the next one, 6 p.m. Actually, I believe there's some festivities before the meeting. There'll be a golf and wine time before the 6 p.m. meeting. Executive committee will meet right before that. And then the meeting after that will be July 9th in Canyon Lake. There is, we did update our website with the league, and I did post the schedule on the new website, so hopefully it'll be a little bit easier for you to get to. We also have a Facebook page now for the Riverside Division of the league, so I'll be posting updates on that as well.
Thank you, Erin.
Well, thank you for having me. I look forward to working with all of you.
Erin, one more question. The May revise, it doesn't sound like there's a lot of local hits in the governor's May revise. Are there any hits to the county as they are a bit different in subdivision of the state?
None that jumped out. Like I said, I was just trying to glance through it while I was sitting back here before I spoke, but there weren't any that really jumped out. It looked like, oh, the state took some hits. State employees, the governor proposed a 4-day work week. So I know that could have an impact on just any sort of interaction with agencies and departments. But I didn't see anything that jumped out as much with local government, but that doesn't mean there isn't. I know I need to read it a little bit more, so I'll send out any information that I get as the day goes on.
Rod, it's going to be even harder to get CalPERS now with a 4-day work week.
When did they go up to 4?
You know, try to react to all this. It kind of feels like a kamikaze pilot wearing seatbelts, you know?
Thank you.
At least they renew my hope. You think it can get worse? It does. A new seatbelt.
I've got a few announcements. The next TAC meeting will be June 11th at 10:30 a.m. on June 11th. The next exec meeting will be June 4th at 4:30. And then the General Assembly will be on June
23rd. None. Okay. Oh, wait. Can I force one on? I read your email this morning about the $1 million you got for Park 811. You want to throw about that a little bit?
Sure. As you all know, we applied for a sustainability grant through the state of California. The Inland Empire generally doesn't fare so well in Sacramento on sustainability initiatives and grants. In fact, I think Cala Mesa received a small grant a year ago, but of the millions of dollars that have been distributed in the last 2 years from Sacramento, Riverside, San Bernardino County, have not received very much at all. We did receive the maximum award, call it $1 million. Our grant application was actually $997,000. It was matched with a Riverside County Open Space District funds of $750,000. We don't have, of course, a contract in place yet, but the Sustainability Council did meet on Thursday and unanimously approved our application with a number of others. So it's good news, and it does allow us to fund engineering, design, and environmental compliance over the next couple of years. Thanks for the reminder. Heck, we sent that out on Friday. It's been a long weekend.
A little.